KX, KF4, NXY.
4H Get. You call me, David?
Are you Patrick, N4ZLK?
Afternoon, Shane. I thought I did, but I just had my radio turned down low and I'm watching TV.
He came back in here. Headed home. Got off a little late tonight. Fairly easy day, just my pickups were not ready and heavier than they have been in a while.
I bet you had an easy day and you're heading home. Sorry it's late, but you got to do what you got to do, though.
Oh, and it feels like Friday for some reason. I do not know why it felt like Friday all day long. I keep thinking, oh, good. And then I remember, and then it's got to do it all over again.
Roger that. I found that's one tough thing to keep track of what day of the week it is.
Semi-retired, it probably is hard to keep track of what day it is.
Something must happen to his radio.
Why? David, are you there? N4ZLK. Am I making it okay? This is a new microphone I bought for my 8900. This is the third microphone for it, and I went ahead and replaced it with the newer Yaesu microphone.
Sound good into the repeater, Shane. No problems at all. Let's see if I can shoot David a text message right quick. I think I got his number.
I can't remember his first name, but KQ4LOO. He called out a couple times, and I responded to him. That was this morning. And I don't know if he didn't hear me or if he... I was wondering if it was my radio, but he didn't hear me because he never came back.
Yeah, that's Tao. Got to know him a little bit during the storm. That's his call. I know he's been back around the repeater last month, so hopefully he's getting his radio straightened out.
Call like T-A-U or T-O-W or something?
Yeah, I don't know how you spell it. I just know that's his name.
Talked one time, or I talked with him. I think it was one night after the net, maybe. I don't remember getting his name, but anyway, he was looking for a radio or a signal report, and I thought maybe he had his volume down.
And David just texted back something with his radio, but he's okay. So, don't worry about that. And Tal's real name is Talmage. So it's T-A-L, I'm assuming that's what he shortened it.
Tal, okay. Yeah, I don't know if you heard earlier, talking to Tom about 11:30 or 11:15 or so, he and Bernice and John, K4WCL, came in, and we switched over to the 7-9 machine because he was headed down 11, headed up to Murphy, North Carolina. That's where Lori, his wife, her mother's house was. They were meeting somebody up there to sell it, so we talked on the 7-9 machine for probably...
It's been coming in really good lately. It's up on 5-y. So whatever they've done to that one is working really well.
So with Sassafras, is that something different?
A different repeater. I'll have to look it up again.
This 146790 is on Sassafras. That's what it says anyway. I'm curious what the other one is now you were thinking of, and where Spivey is. You said Spivey, right?
Nashville. But it's been doing really well. Also, been listening to Harry on it. Tried to get in a couple times and just hadn't got anybody to come back to me.
The 7-9 machine from your place?
I don't remember if I have or not.
Repeater too. It's got... If not just as good, it may have better coverage than this one. I always, you know, I've known about it for years, and a lot of times I'll check into the net at 8:30, but I don't hang out over there, but it goes way down into Georgia as well, and way down 11, you know, that part of South Carolina.
I think I've gotten into that one before, and I get in, but not great for my location.
Can hit that from his house, but he can't hit the 6-1 from his house, this one. And I can't talk to him simplexing. Talk to him on 80 meters, great, at nighttime. But as far as the VHF, I think the 7-9 is the best one that where I can reach him, or maybe one of the Pickens repeaters.
Across that ridge there, so I can see that working, and you're closer to that state line down that way too in Anderson. So I imagine that does have pretty good coverage down that way.
It's down just west of Commerce in Georgia, and he can pull up the 7-9 machine from his place. I know it's got good coverage.
The 7-9 is the one on Sassafras. I must be thinking about something different. Otherwise, I'll have to look it up.
Last week sometime, I guess it might have been the first of the week, I was on our property in the morning, and I heard two guys talking on this frequency, but it was another repeater. And I could hear both. I could hear the repeater coming in really well. They sounded like they were on this one, except it wasn't the same tone identifier. I don't know where it was, but that was the morning. There was a really good, well, that was a good sign, but there was a lot of activity on 520. I heard a guy up in Boone, North Carolina, making calls on 146.52.
You telling me about that earlier this week, I believe it was. And, yeah, there was one morning that it was really crazy how far it, or how things sounded. And I just looked up, the one I was thinking about up on Spivey is the 146.910.
I wonder if it gets over the mountain, like the Asheville, Hendersonville repeaters I can hit when I'm in Greenville. But as soon as I get closer to home, I can't get them.
To give it a try, I know I can hit it down in, or I've heard it when I was down in Easley, so probably can. Imagine if you get in, but you never know. Sometimes a repeater will get out further than it can hear.
What's the busiest repeater up your way other than the 519? What's a busy local repeater up your way?
Would probably be the 6-4 or now I've been monitoring the 910, that one.
Where is the 6-4? I mean, I've been told before, I think, and I mean, I could look it up, but in relation to Asheville or Hendersonville, which direction is it?
Coming up 26, it will be on the northeast side of Hendersonville. It's on Barawalla Mountain. It overlooks Lake Lure, so it's in that area that over that way.
We were up on Chimney Rock State Park the last time we were standing there. There's one of the overlooks there. When you go into the park, you go up where the chimney actually is, you know, where the flag is. But if you go on up, hike on up, there's an overlook, and it's got a railing, and you're looking down over the valley, and it's got pictures of the different mountains and the direction that they are, you know, points them out. And I'm sure I saw it. The name is familiar, Barawalla Mountain, but that was pretty cool, looking at the different names of mountains. And if you look due east, I actually could see Kings Mountain on a very clear day.
Find me a good topo map that had all that stuff listed. My grandparents used to have a 3D map where you set it on a table and look at it, and it had the mountains already up and location of everything, so it had a really good visual of where everything was at. But I don't know what happened to that one.
And the Table Rock area, and maybe Caesar's Head, too. I need to pull that back out, a relief map. I really like those kind of things. problem is storing them, keeping them in a good place so they don't get damaged. And, but yeah, we just don't, most of us don't know the names of mountains like future or past generations did. They, of course, I guess it helps them when you live in the area, but I think a lot of people living up that way now don't keep up with the names.
I think you're right. I know I don't know the mountaintops as well as I should, let's put it that way.
Okay, so is that what you just sent me? Is that Bear Wallow?
I sent you a couple, so they're all of Bear Wallow and the repeater system up there.
That when I get home, because I would not look at them while I'm driving down the road, you know.
Well, that's why I was telling you what I was sending you now, that way you could look at it later.
Anything done around the house today that you couldn't work out where you were doing?
Wanted to.
That is always the case. Unless I am, well, highly motivated or by myself or something, but it's hard to get everything done that I want to.
It seems to be the case, that's for sure. I got a long list of things to do around here, and it seems like I never get to the top of the list.
Out of time to get everything done.
As they say, I guess that's why they call it over the hill. But hey, you just take it one day at a time. But Shane, I'm gonna jump off here and finish watching the show we were watching. I just thought I heard David call out there, but good to hear you. And tell Beth we said hello, and you be safe the rest of your trip. And maybe I'll catch you tomorrow. KO4HK. I'll be clearing your final.
Patrick, I enjoyed it, as always. And hello to Elise. You guys have a good evening. KO4HK and 4ZLK.
I'm kind of old, ain't you, Shane? And Gerald Tion.
Have time for him, Tom.
I believe that. Oh, Bernice just brought me a cup of coffee. I don't know whether I'll drink it or not. What do you think?
Maybe that'll help you stay up a little bit tonight. And I think there might have been somebody trying to get in there, too. Sounded like a little bit of a double with you, but you won.
Oh, I'm just, the pizzas are in. And I'm just sitting there eating some fresh peaches and milk and a little bit of sugar and an oatmeal cookie. How's your day going?
That peachy. Did you catch the pun there? But it's going good. that sounds pretty good. Peaches and cream and oatmeal, cookies. I'll tell you, what could be better?
The fruit stand up there on 101 has lots of peaches. And they're really looking good this year so far. Boy, I'm telling you, that wind this afternoon and now has been horrific. How do you stay on the road?
Chief KP2HXS mentioned that earlier today, and I was looking. There wasn't much where I was at the time, but as the evening wore on, it got windier and windier down where I was, south of Greenville. You know, they do pretty good. I mean, when I was working at night, and we'd have some pretty good wind and storms. Every once in a while, I'd feel something pretty good, you know. But I guess I haven't been in one of those where, you know, one of those blows where it pushes the trailer over. I've seen some of those videos. I've never been in anything that rough, so you just kind of point it in the direction it should go, and it usually does all right.
Are you driving a semi today or a box truck?
Every day. I haven't been in a box truck in a long time.
I didn't know that. I thought when you switched jobs there, sometime back, that you might have had to drive some of the box trucks. Well, that's good. Using you where you're the best at. Oh, I was looking for something here on the TV. They had broken arrows on there a while ago. That's when they lost nuclear bombs way back when on the B-52s. And now they're doing a show on the B-29s. I didn't realize that that plane had killed a lot of people in its development. And this one general in the Air Force said, you'll either make it or you'll pay us back the $50 million we've invested in it. So they decided to go ahead and make it. But it cost a few lives, I'll tell you. But Boeing put one in commission here a while back, and it's flying. I got to see it fly over up at Oshkosh one time when they first got it done. And it's quite an airplane, I'll say.
Good to say, mass produced a lot of those things, if I'm thinking correctly. And a lot of them got shot down, and a lot of them came back in tatters. But I remember reading that just about some of these air crews, and you know, the captain or the pilot or whoever, the old guy on the plane. A lot of those were he was at least 25, and he was the old man of the plane.
When they first started out, they had a lot of pilots that just had 100 hours. That's not enough to fly a B-29. I'm going to tell you, those old reciprocating engines, and I flew in reciprocating engines, they're not near as reliable as a jet engine by far.
I mean, that was some real flying. Not to take anything away from the pilots of today, because that's pretty good flying, too. But, man, you had to know what you were doing with those things and be willing to risk a lot.
Loved the sound of the reciprocating engines, but they were complex as heck. I didn't know a whole lot about other than the transducers, you know, like the things that sent back the conditions of stuff to the instrumentations in our aircraft, because I went through electrical and instrument school. But as far as knowing anything about the mechanical parts of them, I just know they were really hard and took a lot of talented mechanics to keep those dang things going. But boy, when those things would fire off, they're just no feeling like it. And when you taxi out to the runway and they just start humming when they throw them to full throttle. It's just something you never forget. They were a lot of fun to fly in. Our pilot took us up one day, and you had to go to a certain level, and he feathered, I think it was the left engine. Can't remember now, it's been too many years. And I could hear that thing roaring. And it skids, you know, left and right whenever you feather an engine like that. And he looked back at me, because we were real close. There were just four of us on that plane. And he looked back at me and he said, look, Ralph, no hands. I said, Captain Beck, get your hands back on that yoke. he was a Mustanger. He come up through the ranks, and he was honored as could be.
I've been on a couple of those old planes. I've never been up in them. I was thinking about one they had downtown at Greenville. They flew in a couple of Warbirds, and I'm thinking it was I'm trying to remember the name, B-17, or is there a B-14? I'm not sure. I don't think so. But anyway, kind of had the glass in the front, and it was kind of odd looking. And you probably know what it is, but we took went in one end and out the other, but you were basically on a little gangplank down the whole body of the airplane, and all underneath you is just the bomb bay and the bomb bay doors, and I just pictured myself standing on that with those doors open, looking down into the vast distance of whatever you were bombing.
It was 25 down there, and it had a glass nose, and it had twin tails on it. Did that one have twin tails?
exactly what I was picturing. So that would be the B-25 then.
When it come down there, I didn't go down there. I've seen several of them over the years. I was trying to think of the name of that. That's the ones they launched off of. I can't even remember the name of the carrier now. It's very similar to the carrier I was on. They launched it off a carrier, and they didn't think it could be done. And they're the ones that launched early when the Japanese and they lost their surprise. And so they took off 300 or 400 miles early, and they bombed Japan. It was just a psychological thing. They didn't do it. They bombed Tokyo, and it was kind of a suicide mission because a lot of them didn't make it on over to China. They had to bail out over the ocean and such. Old Dad Burnett, I forget the general's name right now, but I remember it well.
A little.
That's fact. I had it on the tip of my tongue. Yeah, those guys had more guts than a packing house. And that was a deck run. Now, we could do a deck run, but most of the, I never did do one, but we had hydraulic catapults on the USS Bennington that I was on, and they'd kick the snot out of you compared to steam catapults. But back then, they didn't have the catapults. They did deck runs. And they were straight deck, no angle deck. So when they come in, they had nets up in case you didn't catch one of the four wires. But they had them planes all backed up on the fantail, and each one of them took off. And the flight officer has to time that just right so that the carrier's coming up on a swell and not going down. He can make you fly right into the water.
Something about that, and they had some footage of them going off the end of that carrier, if I'm not mistaken, unless it was a reenactment, but I think it was footage. And man, they would, you'd see them go off the end, they'd drop down out of sight, and then they'd slowly come pulling back up. That was that took some guts there too.
General TR, the first time I landed, that I flew aboard, we missed the wires, and they screamed Bolter in my headset, because we wore full helmets on that plane. And I didn't know what they were talking about, to be honest with you. And we had been briefed on that, and we went off the end of that angle deck, and they go full throttle when they land. Even on the jets, they go full throttle in case they miss. And, oh my gracious, it's like going over a hill and losing your stomach on a carnival ride. And back around we went, and next time we caught the third wire, I think it was what they shoot for. And no problem, but it sure scared the snot out of me.
Or is that okay? Yeah, you don't have a lot of time to think about whether you hit or not, do you? You gotta, that's a split-second decision.
The throttle's right in front of me sitting here, and they're up on the top of the cockpit, and when the captain lands it, he's got his hands on that, and the second he touches down, he pushes those things forward. Now you can overboost those reciprocating engines, so I don't know how he knew not to overboost them, but he pushed straight forward, you know, and the engine would be going full blast, and you just hear, and you were stopped from about 120 miles an hour.
Been pretty good, those seats, or is it just a lap belt?
A harness, and there was a little handle right down by your hip on the left side with a little ball on it, and that was the inertial harness. So in other words, I could release it and lean forward and work on my instrumentation after we got airborne on the equipment that I run. But when you landed, that was supposed to be back. But I always liked to look out the front window as we were landing, and so I would release it until just a couple of seconds before we touched down. Then I'd lean back real quick and put the inertial harness on, and it'd shove you right into that harness forward. I don't know how many G Lindus amount, but you kind of stretched that harness forward quite a bit. It would not have been good not to have that locked.
It's good that they think of all those things, but some of the stuff you wonder, what happened, or did someone have to experience something before they thought of it? Because they got a lot of features, a lot of safety features and backup systems on all those things.
Well, you know how when you jerk the seatbelt on your car sometimes when you're putting it on, it locks up? That was the very same thing. It worked the same way.
Good. Sometimes they work so good, they lock up on you and you can't get it undone. And you have to work your way around a little bit, try to get some tension released on it.
It beats the snot out of me when it does that. but it worked good. And, it was something to remember. But I can imagine they had a, on the newer carriers way after my time, they had a plane they called it, I think it was the RF-5C Vigilante. And the guys that worked on them called them the Hangar Bay Queens. Oh, God, they were a beautiful jet. They were reconnaissance only. They didn't carry arms. And those things that landed 100 miles. Oh, it's just incredible to hit a deck at that speed. Because a knot is a mile and 1/8 mile per hour. And I'm pretty sure it was around 160 knots. And they were real bad about busting that front landing gear. And the A3D was the heaviest bomber ever put on a carrier, and it was the same way. They bust the nose gear on those things.
Pretty crazy. I watched over at Donaldson Center. I've been able to watch a few F-16s land, take off and land, and there's also a French-made jet that comes and goes sometimes. And whenever it lands, it deploys a parachute. So that was pretty cool to see. I can't remember the name of it. It's French made, and I know when I looked it up, it said the Israeli Army uses them. I don't know if they're the only ones, but I'm assuming it's over here getting worked on. But that was pretty cool to see, and it uses the whole runway. It comes in and lands. It's going pretty quick, and that parachute comes out, and it goes all the way to the end of the runway.
That's the ones at Boeing in Wichita. And it was the B-52s and the B-47s. And they would deploy parachuter more than one at times. And the F-4s would deploy parachutes at times when they come in. I was thinking that might be the Rafael. I'm not sure about that French one. When I hear the names a lot of times, I can remember them anymore, Shane. But most of the jets, like, land down here at GSP are about 140 miles an hour to 160. I think maybe the 747 is about 160. But that's pretty darn fast.
For landing, that's pretty fast speed. I enjoy it, though. I love watching them. Watching one of those F-16s, I heard him call the tower and say he was coming in, and he circled way up high and did a corkscrew down, and then he flew down the runway with no landing gear down and kind of angled up a little bit, and that was pretty cool, and then rose up at the end and banked to the right, and then you could hear him throttle down, and he just cruised around and then came in for a landing. That was a lot of fun to watch.
Wyatt would take me down there someday with him, but he never has. Probably can't. Any place that you can view them down there pretty close?
Pretty good spot. The middle, on the opposite side from the tower, it would be the west side of the runway. There's a big grassy area, and you'll see some cars in there. I pull in there with my tractor and trailer. I got a pickup over there that if I'm early, I'll go sit over there. And it's hit or miss, too. I mean, it's not always guaranteed that they're going to be there. A couple times I've just happened to be driving by, like the other morning I was driving by and saw that French plane taxiing. So I went over there real quick and watched him take off. And I heard ATC tell him he was cleared to 10,000. Runway heading cleared to 10,000, and he went to the end of the runway and cleared to 10,000 pretty quickly. He just kind of pointed straight up.
All of them, as soon as they take off from GSP, they'll say radar contact when they get high enough that they pick them up on radar, and they'll say climb to 10,000 and 10,000, and call Atlanta Center 135.35, I think it is, and that's the standard thing that they go through when they take off down there. But no sooner than they're up there, they call Atlanta Center. They're in Atlanta airspace pretty darn quick. Those 747s, they look like we was down there at QT eating an ice cream cone the other day. We park over on the north side of it so we can watch them. And then I listen to them on the radio. They look like they're going to fall out of the air. They're so big, they don't look like they're running 140 or 160 miles an hour.
There was a couple of C-130s that took off the other day. And same thing, you're watching them thinking, there's no way they're going to get up in the air, but they sure do. Anyway, Tom, I've enjoyed it, and I am pulling in the driveway. So, and I got something in my throat. I'll let you go. You and Bernice have a good evening. Enjoy that. You're probably done with it now, the cookie and peaches. I'll talk to you again. N0TR and 4ZLK.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, Shane. And you stop and think about this, Shane. Each one of those engines, even way back, like we had on the P3 Orion, were 4,600 shafts horsepower each. Add that up. That's what the C-130s got, only newer ones, and they got those funny-looking propellers now that are much more efficient. So they got a lot of power. They can probably fly on two engines real easy. Talk to you later, Shane. N4ZLK. N0TR73.
Yeah, they are powerful for sure. And 4ZLK.